From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the program with some classic comedy, as we have an episode of the Jack Benny program. This is from the Jell-O era of sponsorship, Money Ain't Everything, as originally broadcast December 6th, 1936.
J-E-L-L-O!
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston and Phil Harris and his orchestra. The orchestra opens the program with I'm in a Dancing Mood from the picture This'll Make You Whistle. Only 16 more shopping days from now till Christmas. 16 busy days, each day busier than the one before. 16 days with little time for planning or preparing your daily menus. So stock up on Jell-O right now, because with Jell-O in your kitchen, you'll never be at a loss for a delicious, easily prepared dessert. You'll save time and trouble whenever you serve Jell-O, and its refreshing taste, its bright, cheerful color are a happy prelude to Christmas time. Jell-O is always welcome, for Jell-O is always enjoyable with its fine, fresh fruit taste. More of the flavor of real ripe fruit, more skillfully blended. These are the reasons for Jell-O's added richness. No other gelatin dessert has Jell-O's extra rich fruit flavor. So make sure you get the real thing. Insist on genuine Jell-O. As I'm in a Dancing Mood, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that, Hey, Jack.
Yeah?
What's the matter with your eye?
Nothing. Why?
Well, it looks kind of swollen and discolored.
It's nothing. Go on and introduce me, will you? This isn't television.
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that genial fellow with the gray suit and the black eye, Jack Benny.
Hello again, this is Smiling Jack Benny coming to you in his usual good spirits and never felt better in his life. And tonight, folks...
No kidding, Jack. What happened to your eye?
Well, Don, if you must know, I was on my way over tonight in a great hurry and I drove into a filling station to get some gas and got into an argument with the attendant. I finally lost my temper and knocked him down.
You did?
Yeah. Then I got up and he knocked me down again. Well, this went on for about 3 minutes, and then I took a terrific swing at him, hit him on the jaw, and he went out like a light.
Well, well, then what happened?
I finally got away without having my windshield cleaned. Look, Don, look, all I wanted was a little gas, that's all. Is that asking too much?
No, of course not.
I didn't want my fenders manicured or any rose water in my radiator. I just wanted a little gas.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Of course, I'll admit I shouldn't have lost my temper amidst such glamorous surroundings. You know what these California gas stations are like.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, what kind of a gas station was it?
What kind? Don, have you ever seen the Taj Mahal by moonlight? With its marble pillars and sunken gardens?
Yes.
Well, just put 3 gas pumps in front of it and you've got it. Well, to tell the truth, I didn't mind so much when the man insisted on cleaning my windshield. But when he started to wash my face, that was going just a little too far.
I don't blame you, Jack. You know, I must drop in there for gas sometime if it's that swanky.
By all means. And if you do, Don, be sure to ask for Oscar. He's the maitre de lubrication.
Meanwhile, Jack, you better have your eye attended to. It's getting worse.
Oh, it'll go away.
Hello, Jack. Do you look good?
I do.
Take a look at his eye, Mary.
Oh. Hello, Jack. You look bad. What happened?
Oh, nothing. I had an argument with a guy who was selling me something, that's all.
You're some sap to buy a black eye.
I didn't buy it. It was given to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't have it for a gift.
Don't be comical. Anyway, you ought to see the other guy. See, I can always take care of myself.
Well, then why do you let that Phil Harris bulldoze you all the time? That guy gets away with murder.
Oh, no, he doesn't. After what I told him last week, he's plenty worried. Believe me, Don, there's not room on this program for both me and Phil Harris. Is there, Mary?
I'm not talking till after Christmas.
You know, Jack, Phil's late again today.
I know it, and I'm just waiting for him to get here, that's all. And you'll hear the... Well, just wait till he gets here.
Now, don't do anything rash, Jack.
Don't worry, he won't.
Oh, no?
Here comes Phil now, and Kenny's with him.
Oh, he's got Kenny that way, too.
Yeah, and then I stuffed a pillow under my shirt and made off like I was fat.
Oh, gee, that's good. You're funnier than Jack.
Who isn't? Hello, Buck.
Hiya, Jack.
Now, come here, Kenny. What's the idea of walking in here 10 minutes late?
Well, I was with Phil.
Now, don't change the subject. I've had enough of your actions coming in here late every week.
This is the first time. It's Phil that's always...
And furthermore, I don't like your attitude one bit. Neglecting your work and running around with girls.
I don't have any girls. It's Phil that's...
Well, cut it out. That's all.
Oh, leave him alone, Jack. He's a lovable dope.
Yeah. Now, look, Kenny, you're just a kid, and you've got your whole life before you. You ought to watch your step. See, do you want to grow up to be like Phil Harris?
Do I? Wow!
Well, you can't do it on this program. Either straighten yourself out, or I'll do it for you.
Say, Jack, it's Phil's fault. Why don't you bawl him out?
Listen, Mary, I'm just ignoring him. That hurts a lot more than a bawling out, believe me.
Well, he's standing there kidding with the orchestra. He doesn't look hurt.
Say, a smile covers many a broken heart. Oh, Don, while you're over there, ask Mr. Harris to play the next number.
Why don't you ask him yourself?
I don't want to talk to him. First thing you know, we'll get into an argument, and after all, I've only got one good eye.
And you want to keep that open.
Yeah. Phil's the type who'll take advantage of my condition. Tell him to play, Don.
Say, Jack, well, you're acting like a kid. Come on, snap out of it. What's the matter with you anyway? If I did anything wrong, I'm sorry. Let's shake hands and make up.
Go on, Jack. Shake hands with him.
Oh, no. It's probably a trick to break my arm. I wasn't born yesterday. Thought he'd catch me off my guard.
Jack, that's ridiculous.
Why, that's the dirtiest trick yet, the big bully.
You better play, Phil.
Okay.
Imagine breaking a guy's arm when he can only see out of one eye. That's the most brutal thing. And look at him. Look at him now, picking up that stick. He's going
to
hit me.
That's his baton. He's getting ready to lead the orchestra.
Oh, I bet he's got it full of lead, the big... Was I'm in love with a brand new baby played by Strangler Lewis and his orchestra. Which would have been rendered much more effectively if their leader got to bed night. Mary, get a load of Phil pretending to be busy over that sheet of music. I bet he's got a phone number written on it someplace.
I bet it's a good one.
Yeah. He brags plenty. I've seen some of those girls he goes out with. They're not so hot.
You said it.
Yeah.
I saw him out with a girl last night, and she wasn't a bit better looking than Loretta Young.
He don't care who he goes out with as long as she splits the check.
Hey, funny man, was that last crack meant for me?
Well, was it? It wasn't meant for Paul Whiteman. So if the shoe fits, put it where it belongs.
Don't tempt him, Jack.
That's so. He talks a great fight.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I've tried to be a regular fella, but you've gone a little too far. Enough is enough.
Oh, you've had enough, huh? You see, Mary, he gives up the coward. That's what he is.
Coward? Why, you swell-headed. You swell-headed.
Punk.
You swell-headed punk. I'll take care of you.
Oh, you will, eh? Well, if I had the use of both of my eyes, I'd give you something to write home about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
For heaven's sake, fellas, what's the matter with you? Ladies and gentlemen, when you order Jell-O for your dessert, insist on genuine Jell-O. Look for the big red letters on the box. And remember, it comes in six delicious flavors: strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime.
Yeah.
Look at that silly goose.
Now, wait a minute. You're not talking to Kenny Baker, you know.
I'll say you're not.
You keep out of it. You hear?
Don't worry, Kenny. I'll take care of him.
You and who else? Ha! Top that one, big boy. Say, Mary, look at him standing there with a chip on his shoulder.
Quiet. It might be muscle.
Yeah, it would be just like him to hide muscle under his coat. The sneak. I'm so mad my ears are ringing.
That's a phone.
Oh. Hello? Who? It's for you, Mary. Plainfield calling.
Plainfield?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mama. How did you happen to call? What? Oh, they're fighting as usual.
Gee, everybody knows about it.
No, don't worry about me. I'll be all right. Oh, it isn't that bad, Mama. I don't have to get under the piano.
You see, Phil?
No, Mama. Jack didn't break Phil's arm. Phil broke Jack's arm.
I did not.
I don't want to disappoint Mama.
No, that's so.
Yes? Yes, Mama's too bad about Jack's eye. What? Well, give my love to everybody. Goodbye.
Well, what are you laughing at?
Mama said if you kept your mouth shut, your eye'd be open.
Oh, she did, huh? Well, why don't she join this program? We're sort of comedians.
Say, Jack.
What?
Kenny wants to sing his song now, and he's afraid to mention it.
Well, let him sing. Why ask me? Nobody around here seems to worry much about what I think.
Should I sing now?
Yes, Kenny. Go ahead. Don't bother asking me. I'm just a stooge around here anyway.
Oh, no, you're not, Jack.
No, oh, not much. No. I'm surprised I'm allowed to talk. Sing, Kenny. Go ahead. Your pal Harris will cooperate with you.
Go ahead, Kenny.
Yes, anytime. In the middle of one of my jokes, if you want to. Don't mind me. Nobody else does. The next orchestra leader I hire is either going to be a gentleman or smaller than I am. Sing, Kenny. What are you waiting for? Sing.
Find my lips meeting your lips until the dawn's early light. I find my arms holding your hand long after we've said goodnight. And I can't reach your heart. Your very wish would be my command. I hold my breath when I hold your hand. Close to me, you're so close. and somehow it's so far apart. I could reach the top of a mountain or the deepest heart of the and I can't reach your
heart. That was Close to Me, sung by Kenny Baker, accompanied by the Jell-O Orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, we were supposed to continue our serial, Buck Benny Rides Again. As you will remember, last Sunday night, the play ended with Buck Benny having just cornered Cactus Face Elmer, the outlaw, in Ike Muller's saloon. But Cactus Face, using unfair tactics, like some other people I'm associated with, made good his escape. Meanwhile, up to this very moment, we have been unable to locate Cactus Face. So tonight, we will have to discontinue Buck Benny.
Aww.
It hurts me too, fellas. Kind of had my heart in that there character. But anyway, not to disappoint our listeners altogether, tonight we are going to present an original society drama entitled Money Ain't Everything. Or, Oh Yeah? I will play the part of J. Stuyvesant Schnorrer, an American missionary who is cruising the Mediterranean on his luxurious yacht.
I will be his daughter, I imagine.
Yes. Don Wilson will play the captain of the boat. And as a special added attraction, he will not mention our product.
Not at all, Jack.
Not one single flavor.
Shucks.
Kenny Baker will play the part of a bogus prince. And owing to the shortage of actors, our orchestra leader will play the part of Kenny's brother, who is also bogus. And I don't mean only in the play.
What?
This will go on immediately after the next number, which will be rendered by that Vine Street playboy and his yes man. Mary, take a quick look and see if Phil is burning up. From the big broadcast of 1937. And now for our play, Money Ain't Everything. The scene takes place on the palatial yacht of that well-known millionaire, J. Stuyvesant Schnorrer, which is cruising the peaceful Mediterranean with a gay party of moochers aboard. We now take you to the yacht, Bad Check, which is bouncing all over the Mediterranean. Curtain, music, waves. Mrs. Vanderveer. Mrs. Vanderveer.
Yes, Mr. Schnorrer.
You'll have to ask your little boy to put back the steering wheel. We've been going around in a circle for 3 days.
How do you know?
We just bumped into the back of the boat.
Very well.
Well, Mr. Schnorrer, look. We're heading straight for an iceberg.
An iceberg? Where?
Right ahead of you.
That's Wilson and he's cold. Oh, Captain.
Yes, Mr. Schnorrer.
I wish you'd put a bottom in our swimming pool. I've lost 3 of my best friends. And by the way, have you seen my daughter?
She's about someplace, sir.
Well, I must find her.
Begging your pardon, sir, I must warn you about your daughter.
Really?
There are fortune hunters aboard, and now that she's twice as rich as ever before, every day millions of people propose to her.
Now, Captain, are you sure it's my daughter's interest you have at heart?
Yes, and I hope the man she marries will be half as true as the extra-rich true fruit flavor of my favorite dessert.
Thank you, Captain. I'm glad you think as much of my daughter as you do of your job. Ah, here she comes now.
Hello, Peter.
That's Pater. tell me, daughter, where have you been?
Up on the poop deck, drinking pop.
That's a pip.
You said it, Pap.
My child, you look worried tonight. What's on your mind?
Prince Boris and Prince Morris have asked me to marry them, and I don't know which one to accept.
You mean those bogus noblemen? Why, they're nothing but fortune hunters. Where are they now?
Down in the coal bin playing shovelboard.
That's calling a spade a spade. Now, my dear child, why do you want to marry either one of those designing schemers? They're only after my money.
That's not true.
It is true, and you know that such a marriage cannot last.
Oh, you say that every time I get married.
And I'm always right. You've had enough rice thrown at you to fill the Hollywood Bowl. Weddings, husbands, every year a new honeymoon. Why do you get married so often?
I got a boyfriend in Niagara Falls.
Well, one thing you can be sure of, young lady. I won't stand for either one of those fake princes.
Pardon me, Mr. Schnorrer.
Yes?
The stowaways are complaining about the food.
Well, tell them to throw it overboard.
They did, and the sharks threw it back.
What's the score?
Oh, Pater, here come the two princes now. Ah, Prince Boris.
Mademoiselle.
Prince Morris.
Mademoiselle.
Quiet, Prince. Pater, I want you to meet Boris and Morris. They've been on your yacht for 3 months.
Oh, so that's who they are. I saw them in the dining room so often, I thought they were the waiters. Give me back my tip.
Fooey on you.
That goes for me, too.
You, I'm not worried about. Now, your highnesses, I understand that both of you bums are in love with my daughter. Is that right?
Yes.
And you want to marry my daughter?
Yes.
And if I was broke, would you still want to marry her?
Yes.
Just as I thought. I won't stand for this, daughter. You can't marry either one of them.
Oh, but I love him, Father.
Which one?
The one in the middle.
You need glasses. Where did he come from?
The pup deck.
Well, let's get down to facts. Even if I should permit this marriage, Your Excellency, only one of you tramps can be her husband.
I have an idea. We'll toss a coin to decide. Have you a coin, brother?
No. Have you?
No.
Then we'll fight a duel.
Good. Daughter, leave the yacht.
I want to watch.
Leave the yacht, I say.
Okay.
Doggone it, I meant leave the room. Captain. Captain, my daughter fell overboard. Fish her out of the water.
What'll I use for bait?
A mink coat. She'll snap at that.
And I'm not kidding, fella. Oh, yes. Well, let's go on with the duel, gentlemen. Here are the pistols.
Mine's okay.
Hey, wait a minute. Mine isn't loaded.
Huh, you're telling me. Now stand back to back. Pistols in right hand. March 10 paces. Turn and fire. Understand?
Yes.
All right. Ready? One. Two. Three. Four.
Well, Mr. Schnorr.
Yes?
A cablegram for you, sir.
A cablegram? Let's have it. Hold everything. Hey, fellas, listen to this. It's from Frank Carson.
What does it say?
It says, Dear Buck, have just located Cactus Face Elmer. Return at once. I'm holding the posse till you get here. Well, what do you know about that? Come on, boys, let's go. We ain't got a minute to lose. Buck Benny rides again. Watch out, man. Don't get the horses wet.
This will continue next Sunday night. Will Buck get Cactus Face? Will the horses get wet? Will Phil Harris get here on time?
These and many more questions will be answered next Sunday night.
Jack, are you screwy?
Tune in next Sunday night and find out. Play, Phil.
Chocolate pudding has been one of the most popular desserts, but now it's more popular than ever, and all because of Jell-O chocolate pudding, the new way to make that grand old-fashioned favorite. Jell-O chocolate pudding is smoother, creamier, more chocolatey. It's amazingly easy to make, too, and it brings you delicious, real homemade flavor. Just follow these simple directions. Mix the contents of a package of Jell-O chocolate pudding with some milk in the top of your double boiler and let it cook for about 10 minutes when the mixture will be thick and luscious. Wait for it to cool and then serve your prize pudding in sherbet glasses. It's no trouble to make. And once you've tasted Jell-O chocolate pudding, I know you'll agree that it's one of the swellest desserts you ever served. Your family and friends will tell you so, too. Get some Jell-O chocolate pudding in the morning. It sells for the same low price as Jell-O, and one package makes enough for 6 happy servings. If your grocer hasn't put Jell-O chocolate pudding in stock yet, be sure he orders it for you.
This is the last number of the 10th program in the new Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. And I'll be glad to see, that is, Mary and I will be glad to see, all of our Phoenix, Arizona friends Tuesday night. Say, Mary, I'm giving a little party tonight at the Trocadero. You want to join me?
Oh, sure, Jack.
How about you, Don?
Thanks, Jack. I'll be glad to.
You too, Kenny?
Okay.
Well, I guess that's about all.
Didn't you forget someone, Jack?
Oh, I don't think so, no. good night, folks.
The tune Just One of Those Things is from the production Jubilee. The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny has come to you from the NBC studios in Hollywood. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI, Los Angeles, Earl C. Anthony Incorporated. 9:13.
From December 6, 1936, the Jack Benny program. Money Ain't Everything. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, presenting an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email, qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. Occasionally, we like to present more contemporary radio drama, and we'll do so for our final offering in this hour, an episode of the sci-fi series Alien Worlds. This program was produced in the late 70s and distributed mainly to FM rock stations. This broadcast was program number 23 in the series, first released for syndication September 9th, 1979. It's entitled Seeds of Time.
And now, Peter Paul Mounds, Almond Joy, and Cadbury Chocolate Bars presents Alien Worlds. Slowly rotating at the edge of deep space, 1,000 kilometers beyond the atmosphere of 21st century Earth, is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory, Starlab. Here, Starlab Research Director Maura Cassidy and scientists and technicians of the International Space Authority watch over the countless stars and planets that fill the silent distances beyond the giant space station. This week, an ancient intruder from another galaxy exposes Starlab to the genetic mysteries of the seeds of time on Alien Worlds. Beyond Starlab, the SET interceptor Solaris reduces speed and moves into a preliminary docking orbit with a huge space station. Aboard the Solaris, Captains John Graydon and Buddy Griff.
Solaris to Starlab Control.
This is Starlab. Go ahead, Solaris.
We're holding at the outer boundary, Jerry. How soon can you get us aboard?
Traffic's pretty heavy right now, John. I've got a Soviet freighter and two Canadian tankers coming in now, and three lunar shuttles in a docking orbit 2 kilometers out. Now hold your position. I'll get back to you in about 10 minutes.
Roger, Starlab. Solaris out.
Starlab, clear.
Well, since 10 minutes usually means half an hour, why don't we put the ship on autopilot and go down to the cargo bay for a little zero-gravity racquetball?
Do you know where the rackets are?
Oh, they're floating around down there somewhere.
All right, let's go. What?
We better stay, Skip. The high-density scanners are picking up something.
How far away?
4.6 kilometers. And it's holding at 081 degrees starboard.
Get a full magnification visual and bring it up on screen 6.
Right.
What is it? I don't know. I've never seen anything like it.
In the center of the screen, against a background of jet black space and scattered stars, the mysterious object begins to slowly rotate, reflected sunlight blazing from each of its 10 smooth surfaces.
Solaris to Starlab.
This is Starlab. Go ahead, Solaris.
Jerry, we're visually monitoring a UFO. Are you picking it up on your scanners?
No, I don't think so. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, there is something out there about 4 kilometers from your present position.
Right. Okay, tell Maura what the situation is, and you'd better notify Professor Ballin, too. We're going in for a closer look.
I'll keep an eye on you from here, John. Be careful. Starlab out.
What do you think, buddy?
Well, let's play it safe and sort of sneak up on it. I'll do a tomography profile at 3 kilometers. If the thing's not dangerous, we can get in close and do a phase one scanner series.
And what if it explodes and blows us to kingdom come?
You know, maybe we should stick to racquetball.
Whoa. Talk about sensory overload. Wonder how she keeps her balance. Maybe it's trick photography. Ah, couldn't be. No photographer is that tricky.
Touch nobody fine to Starlab Control.
This is Starlab. Go ahead, Maggie.
We've got a problem, Jerry. We're still working on this new orbital power satellite at Vector 706, and we just lost our last bundle of solar panels.
What happened?
An anchoring cable on the superstructure let go, and the panels have drifted off into deep space. Can you help us out? This thing's supposed to be operational by tonight.
How many panels do you need?
10.
What type?
Amplitron ST-16.
Oh, hold on. I'll check the computer and see what we got. This is your lucky day, Maggie. We've got 24 SB-16s in storage. Will this be a pickup or a delivery?
I won't be able to spare any of our tugs for another hour or so. What's available on your end?
Well, we've got a Soviet freighter heading your way in about 15 minutes. I'll have the captain contact you, okay?
I'll stand by for his call. Thanks, Jerry.
Starlab control, clear. Docking Bay 12, this is the bridge.
Bay 12, go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, Ernie, call storage bay 19 and tell them to deliver 10 Amplitron SP-16 solar panels to the Odessa, and then have Captain Vashenko contact Construction Orbiter 5. It's kind of an emergency.
Will do, Jerry.
Now, where was I? Right. Sensory overload. Oh, yeah. Wow, look. Oops.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Mara.
You heard from John and Buddy?
Yeah, about 20 minutes ago. They've maneuvered the Solaris into a side-by-side position with the UFO, and Buddy said he'd contact us as soon as he did the preliminary scan series.
Okay. What's that magazine you're holding behind you?
Magazine?
Come on, Jerry, hand it over.
Oh, Mara.
The Astounding Adventures of Galactic Gladys, the Girl Wonder?
Well, you know.
Which one of these bimbos is Galactic Gladys?
I believe that's her there, locked in mortal combat with the evil swamp gas creature.
Well, she's certainly a wonder, all right. I'll bet she hasn't seen her feet in years. Jerry, where did you get this publication?
I found it in the technician's lounge.
Uh-huh. I wondered why they were all running around down there with their tongues hanging out. Jerry!
Hi, Professor Ballin.
How you doing, Jerry?
David, you're just in time for a little X-rated science fiction. Look at this.
What happened to her clothes?
The evil swamp gas creature ate them.
Well, yum, yum.
I don't know about you, David. 3 days on Starlab and you're already starting to sound like Buddy Grip.
It must be the altitude.
Solaris to Starlab Control.
This is Starlab. Go ahead, John.
We finished the preliminary scans on the UFO. Is Mara there?
I'm right here, John, and so is our new alienologist.
Okay, here's Buddy. The object is 3 meters square and shaped like a decahedron. It's made of some kind of copper-colored metal that's about 75% hydrogen. As far as we can tell, there's no inboard or outboard propulsion system.
How fast is it moving, Buddy?
How fast do you want it to move?
What does he mean, John?
Well, it was stationary when I brought the ship alongside, but for the past 10 minutes, it's been matching our speed, no matter how fast it goes.
What kind of a readout did you get on the tomography scan, Buddy?
The interior of the thing is filled with some kind of ionized gelatin that converts to nitrogen plasma, and then reconverts to gelatin at 12-second intervals.
Buddy, is it giving off any kind of sound?
Yes, it is. When the gelatin converts to plasma, the object gives off what sounds like accelerated heartbeats. And when the plasma reconverts to gelatin, we hear the heartbeats in reverse.
Alien Worlds will continue.
This woman's sorry for keeping you guessing. You never know what I'll do. That's why I'm here confessing. It's because sometimes I feel like a nut, sometimes I don't. I'm in Joyce got nuts, mounds don't. I'm in Joyce got chocolate eating, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got chocolate eating, chewy coconut, ooh. Sometimes I feel like a nut, sometimes I don't. Joyce got nuts, mounds don't.
Because
sometimes I feel
Returning from a routine patrol aboard the Solaris, SET Captains John Graydon and Buddy Griff encounter an unidentified flying object 50 kilometers beyond Starlab.
The object is 3 meters square and shaped like a decahedron. It's made of some kind of copper-colored metal that's about 75% hydrogen.
As John maneuvers the Solaris into a side-by-side position with the UFO, Buddy continues to analyze the object with the ship's tomography scanners.
The interior of the thing is filled with some kind of ionized gelatin that converts to nitrogen plasma, and then reconverts to gelatin at 12-second intervals.
What do you think, David?
I think we better see about getting that thing into one of the isolated laboratory pods.
Buddy, shoot a magnetic grappler over and see if you can bring it in.
We already tried that, Maura. The grappler pad won't stick. The object is anti-magnetic.
How about if you go EVA and try to push it into the Solaris's cargo bay?
Hold on just a moment, please. I don't think that'll be necessary. From the way it's been matching our speed, I think it'll follow us in.
All right, give it a try. If it works, get the object as close as you can to the outboard airlock of Isolab 9. I'll have a crew standing by to take it inside.
Okay, Maura. Solaris out.
Starlab clear.
Come on, David. Let's get down there.
Later, the Solaris maneuvers the object into a position 2 meters away from Isolab 9's outboard airlock. Then, as John guides the Solaris into a nearby docking bay, the lab's airlock opens, and a crew of technicians in yellow pressure suits and tinted glass helmets take the alien decahedron inside. 10 minutes later, the object rests on a slowly rotating observation pad in the center of the lab's brightly lit quarantine chamber.
It's remarkably beautiful, isn't it?
Frightens me.
Why?
The way it looks. The color and size, texture. All those desperately perfect angles constantly repeating themselves. Its physical aspects are so familiar, we can call them by name in a language we all understand. And yet we don't know what it calls itself or what it might be calling us.
You feel whatever's inside is alive?
Don't you?
Yes.
Well, at least our scientific selves are still in sync.
Maura, please, not now.
Hey, who's here?
Hi, fellas. Well, I'm glad to see it hasn't blown up yet. Come on, Skip, let's go inside for a close-up.
Yeah, okay.
I think you better stay on this side of the glass for a while. The object's still being scanned. If you go in there now, your body impulses will be included in the scanner data.
Maybe we should go in anyway, just to blow their minds up in data processing.
I can hear Professor Clark now.
I say, Ramsey, have you seen this printout? Graydon and Griff are trapped inside that alien gizmo.
Really? How do you know it's them?
Elementary, my dear Ramsey. The tall one's thumbing his nose, and the short one thinks it's funny.
Maura, David, not even a smile. What's with you two?
We've got a lot on our minds, John.
I see. Well, okay. Come on, Skip, let's go have dinner.
Yeah, right.
So we'll see you guys.
See you later.
It's time we had a talk, David. Let's go up to my quarters.
Starlab wasn't my idea, Maura. We go where the ISA wants us to go, you know that.
If I'd known you were married, I would have asked Commissioner White to send someone else.
Why?
When I was told you were going to spend 3 months on Starlab, I thought we were getting a second chance.
Second chance for what, Maura? To pick it up where it fell apart 3 years ago?
Why not?
Because your work has always been more important to you than anything else. And I don't think that'll ever change. Even when things were good, we were never together more than 3 months out of the year. Your whole life was spaceports and laboratories and conferences and trips off the planet.
You make it sound like I didn't care at all.
I don't mean to, Maura. I know you cared. And I know you love me. But you love the rockets more.
I'm sorry, David.
So am I. I'll see you in the morning, Maura.
Okay, Lunar Shuttle 10, I have you on the screen. Your docking orbit insertion coordinates are 509er at subvector 70 alpha.
509er at 70 alpha. Roger, Starlab. Lunar Shuttle 10, out.
Starlab control, clear. Morning, Maura.
Jerry, have you seen David?
Not since yesterday afternoon.
Good morning, everyone.
Have either of you seen David?
Yeah, we saw him after dinner last night when we went down to have another look at the UFO. He was in the isolab with it. Maybe he's still there.
I checked the isolab 20 minutes ago.
Well, maybe you missed him. Let's get on and take another look. There he is, Maura. Hit the intercom button, Skip.
David, can you come out for a minute?
There's no need to be frightened, Maura. Professor Ballon has not been harmed.
David, what's the matter with you? You sound so...
Maura, his hands are transparent.
David, what happened to your hands?
It's not David.
I am not Professor Ballon, Maura. I am of him. David is safe inside my vehicle.
Well, then open it. Let him out.
As you wish, Maura.
David!
Good God.
Isolab control to sick bay.
Sick bay? Dr. Oster?
Diana, this is Buddy. Get down to Isolab 9 as fast as you can. And bring a portable vital sign indicator. David Ballon's inside the UFO, and he's encased in some kind of gelatin.
There is no need to be frightened. Professor Ballon has not been harmed.
Alien Worlds will continue.
Get the sensation, a cool combination, chocolatey and mint.
Drop peppermint patty.
For the sensation, a perfect relation, chocolatey and mint.
From Peter Paul.
Cool as the snow falling light on the trees. Just take a bite for a cool minty breeze.
New York, peppermint patty. And get the sensation. Sensation, a cool combination, chocolatey and mint.
Your peppermint patty.
For the sensation, a perfect relation, chocolatey and mint.
From Peter Paul.
Send a shiver of cool right down to your knees. After one taste, you just gotta say please.
I want a York peppermint patty to get the sensation.
Get the sensation. Your peppermint patty.
Get the sensation.
Alien Worlds continues. Entering the control booth of Isolab 9, Maura, Buddy, and John discover that the substance inside the alien decahedron has transformed itself into a duplicate of Professor David Ballon, leaving the real David Ballon encased in a cocoon of translucent white gelatin.
Tried to get into the chamber.
The hatch is sealed from the inside.
There's no need to be frightened, Dr. Rossiter. Professor Ballon has not been harmed.
He knows me.
He knows all of us, Diana.
Connect the vital sign indicator to the scanner terminal, John. Oh, he's all right. His vital signs are perfect.
Oh, boy. Well.
If you will be patient, the seed placenta will soon evaporate, and David will be released.
Soon? How long is soon?
Now.
David, are you all right?
I think so, yes. I suggest you leave the chamber now, David. The placenta residue will soon convert to a toxic gas that could mutate your senses. Yes, all right.
Oh, when that thing opened up last night and took me inside, I thought I was a goner. But as soon as the seed placenta started to cover me, I wasn't afraid anymore. It was incredible. I sensed everything that was going on. And when my duplicate emerged, it was like one of those films where the guy dies and you see his spirit leave his body.
Film, huh? I guess art imitates life after all. I think it's the other way around, Skip.
Life and art should be the same.
Oh, yes, they should be. But they rarely are.
Perhaps we should learn the lesson of the Balinese. They say they have no art. They simply do everything as well as they can.
You once said that to me, David.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it, how precisely I've been duplicated.
Well, David, number two. What now?
I want to return to my world, Diana. And I want to take Mara with me.
Now, hold on a minute, you. I'm not in the habit of running off to alien worlds with life forms I hardly know.
You know me, Mara. And I know you.
He's got a point there, Mara.
Well, be that as it may, I just don't think the original me and the duplicate you are ready for... Well, why are your hands transparent anyway?
David was wearing protective gloves that prevented the seed placenta from taking a precise imprint of his hands. And Mara, a duplicate of you is all I want.
Why?
I still love you, Mara.
Oh, David. Why didn't you... Wait a minute. What am I saying?
Oh, this is weird.
David?
Yes?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, David. I mean the duplicate David.
Yes, Diana.
I think all of us would like to know a little more about your origins.
Centuries ago, explorers from another galaxy visited my planet. Their bodies contained bacteria, harmless to them, but lethal to us. There was a plague. And before the end came, our scientists created the placenta substance and filled it with the genetic seeds that were the essence of our race. Then they placed these seeds of time in hundreds of vehicles like this one and set us adrift in the universe.
Was your race humanoid?
Yes, buddy, it was. But some of the cells were randomly coded so we could become whatever organic life form we contacted. I could have been a bird or an insect or even a flower. Any living thing in which the seeds could take root.
What would have happened if you had become a flower?
I would have simply pollinated other flowers of the same species. And my race would have been reborn as a genus of conscious, intelligent orchids or roses.
Would you eventually have re-evolved your original humanoid form?
Eventually, yes. But I'm not a flower, am I? I'm an ion-negative duplicate of a human male. And my race can be reborn only if I interact with an ion-positive duplicate of a human female.
All right, I'll do it.
Good girl.
Thank you, Mara.
It's okay. Just remember, I don't fool around on the first date. What do you want me to do?
Saturate yourself with pure oxygen for 2 minutes. That will protect you from the toxic residue. Then come into the chamber and enter the secondary placenta compartment of my vehicle.
Okay. Get me an E4 oxygen unit, buddy. I'm about to become a double feature.
Okay.
How do you feel, Maura?
I'll be all right, Diana.
I'll be all right, Diana.
Listen to that. I'm in stereo.
Thank you, Maura. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes?
When you and David, this David, are, you know, when you're... will I feel anything?
We don't know, Maura. It's possible.
You'd better leave the chamber now, Maura. The placenta residue is starting to become toxic.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Maura.
Did you arrange for a ship, John?
There's a long-range shuttle waiting for them just outside the airlock.
Maura, you'll be able to fly the shuttle, won't you?
Yes. I love the rockets as much as you do now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, so long, you two.
Maura.
Good luck.
It looks like we're getting that second chance after all, Maura.
You're right, David. You're absolutely right.
Time was written by Ron Thompson and starred Linda Gary, Chuck Olson, Bruce Philip Miller, and Corey Burton, with special guest stars Pete Renaday and Francis Bay. Associate producer Ron Thompson, music director Tom Rounds, engineer Stu Jacobs, technical consultant Peter Sky, assistant to the producer Jim Cook. Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen and is distributed by Watermark Incorporated. And so, until next week, this is Roger Dressler inviting you to join us for our next adventure, The Madonnas of Zanzibar Alpha, from the elsewhere and elsewhen of Alien Worlds. Peter Paul and Cadbury Chocolate Bars hope you've enjoyed Alien Worlds.
An episode of the excellent sci-fi series Alien Worlds, Seeds of Time, released on September 9th, 1979. Most of the stories in the Alien Worlds series took two episodes to complete. This was one of the few which could be completed in just one episode. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Join me again when you can for more classic sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.